We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome on in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. NFL free agency officially upon us. A ton to break down as we got player movement all across the league, impacting our fantasy plans for the upcoming season. Start the show. Welcome on in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, John McKechnie. That is Mario Puig. NFL free agency officially opened on Wednesday afternoon. Of course, the legal tampering period, and hence why your Twitter notifications were going nuts all morning on Monday, was the legal tampering. So all the unofficial signings getting started at the beginning of this week. So there's been a ton, obviously, Mario. I kind of liken this to, you know, in the NFL calendar, there obviously hasn't been a ton going on since the Super Bowl. And then this week, the floodgates open. It's sort of like you're a bit of a reminder of when you're in college and you're in your freshman dorm and you're like dead asleep. And then that there's a fire alarm going off for some reason. Everyone has to evacuate the building. Like that level of like having to spring into action out of nowhere is sort of what this week feels like with all this movement.
Yeah, there's, I'm still kind of catching up on some of it. I've read all the headlines like you, but I have to actually like register it in my mind to recall it. And I'm not at that point yet. Like just kind of remembering, you know, 10 minutes ago, like, all right, Zach Moss is on the Bengals now. So that's I'm still kind of swimming in it.
Yeah, no kidding. We're going to do our best to wade through these waters. So for this episode, we're going to essentially run through the big signings from the fantasy perspective. We'll run through some quarterback movement, a lot of running backs. That's been a big story this week. It has been the return of the running back. All those guys getting money, getting signed, not having to wait around for weeks in order to get their free agent deals done. So a lot of movement there. And then, of course, some pretty notable movement on the wide receiver front, especially Wednesday with the Calvin Ridley saga. That was very interesting to follow along. So we'll get to your thoughts.
Might be there, better named the Balky saga, the Ballad of Trent or whatever.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm already looking forward to that. But let's lead things off at the big position at the quarterback spot. Kirk Cousins leaving for greener pastures. Going away from Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Dome Stadium in Minnesota, but probably tougher division, NFC North. Going on down to my backyard, Atlanta. I might even see some Falcons gear on the streets here for once. Usually, you don't really see a ton of Falcons fans. They kind of like hide that from it. Yeah, I mean, honestly, and I don't blame them whatsoever. But now they have a bit of a reason to celebrate. But you know, if you have any thoughts on the contract for Kirk, let him fly. But for the most part, you know, what does this do to the Falcons offense?
I don't really have any, don't even have a conception of the contract. Like these reported figures nowadays aren't worth looking at basically. So we'll see what the official filings say or whatever. But Cousins, of course, if he's the player he was for Minnesota, he'll be worth quite a lot of money. It's just he's going to be 36 this fall, and he's returning from an Achilles tendon, what was like week 8, 9 or something. So
somewhere there.
That's like a concerning injury if it happens in August, and it's a concerning injury if it happens in August to a 31-year-old quarterback, let alone 36-year-old one. So I think it made sense for the Falcons to go after him. I mean, their quarterback problems have been pretty difficult to tolerate, and if they felt, you know, the urgency to just kind of lash out to get out, then it kind of makes sense, because it's no fun being where they've been. But there is risk, and if Cousins is not himself, you know, while getting into a new offense with new personnel, it might at the very least be like a slow start relative to expectations. If people are expecting, you know, 40 pass attempts a game, you know, 295 yards and 2 touchdowns, 1 interception every week, that might be a bit much. It's not going to be the Arthur Smith offense, but they might need to sort of give him some, they might need to give Kirk Cousins some cover, if only to just sort of make sure the leg is coming along fine, and you know, making sure he's kind of adapting well to the system, rather than throwing him into a situation where he has to learn the system, learn the personnel, while also just being kind of distraught and distracted by his Achilles recovery.
Right, because that's obviously a monster of a rehab to come back from the Achilles. You know, fortunately, Cousins has never been one to overly rely on his mobility, to say the least. So as long as he's, you know, cleared and everything by the time that training camp comes around and he's ready to go for week 1, I really do have a lot of optimism for this offense. I don't have a ton of insight as to what Zach Robinson brings to this offense from a coordinator perspective, but I mean, it's a tale that has, you know, kind of been what everyone's like kind of picked over with the Falcons over the last few years, where it's like they have all these weapons, they can't get to them, they can't use them, that they have to spend a first round pick on Kyle Pitts only to, you know, have Jonnu Smith like out target him on a given week, or you know, you draft Bijan Robinson in the first round and Tyler Algier is the guy certain weeks. And you know, they're to varying degrees of effectiveness. I think Arthur Smith almost like leaned too much into like the almost hubris trying to be vindicated, where he get all peppered by questions, I think more than any other NFL coach from like a fantasy angle, with some of the line of questionings that he would receive. And he's like, oh, you don't think I'm using Kyle Pitts enough? Well, we just won the game, so you know, what do you say about that? But now I think we have reason to believe that the page could be turned, and now we could see what the full potential is for guys like Pitts, Drake London, who I was already pretty high on coming into this year regardless, but now I feel even better about drafting him where I've taken him. It's like a third, fourth round type of guy, his fit with Cousins. I think they still have a little bit of work to do as far as the wide receiver depth is concerned, but you know, as far as the top of the line, top of their depth chart, I mean, I think Kirk Cousins can do a lot to unlock this.
Right, and it's a very low starting point that we're working with. You know, it's an easy bar to clear, and one that, you know, if only because of how profoundly bad the quarterback play has been and like the quarterback management has been with the Falcons, even just a little improvement they could go from kind of like 32nd best offense for route runners to 29th, and it could still be a pretty significant, meaningful improvement. And yeah, if Cousins is 100%, if Cousins is himself, it might go to just kind of at least average. I don't know what a fair expectation would be really, but at least average. And that's, you know, seismic change from what they're starting with. They don't need Cousins to be great to have a great deal of improvement for the offense. And Pitts has to be, yeah, A1 for that. I mean, Drake London is awesome. He's really going to be great. Could be this year that he breaks out, really, really gets on the map. But I do expect Pitts to bounce back too. I think Arthur Smith didn't have a use for a tight end like him, which is to say an inline tight end. You know, like Pitts, he's a tight end, but he's not really an inline tight end. Travis Kelce plays in the slot probably like 3/4 of the time, right? No one cares. So Arthur Smith, for some reason, cared very much, and just kind of resented Pitts's ability to kind of like block from the inline position. And so they'd rotate him out as like a, just to be like a pass route specialist, which tips off the plays. Sorry, which tips off the plays, makes everything more difficult. Pitts also was coming back from like that MCL tear or whatever it was before last year. So he, I think, proved without any doubt his rookie year what kind of player he is. I don't think even three bad years since then, two bad years, whatever it's been, it doesn't change who he is, because that first year did happen and he went into that season at 20 years old. He didn't turn 21 until October of his rookie year, and he was above baseline for the Atlanta passing offense as its lead target on almost exactly 20% target share. So as a 20-year-old player, Kyle Pitts was an above baseline target on a 20% target share as a leading receiver on an NFL offense. And now I'm supposed to believe that he's actually bad because Arthur Smith, you know, found a way to you know, make those numbers go down. I guess we'll see. Maybe Pitts lost something with the injuries or whatever, but I think he's probably going to be like a top five tight end this year if Cousins plays 14 games or more.
So I haven't checked in on the ADP since this signing, but I think he was Kyle Pitts. I'm speaking on eighth, ninth round type of guy. I felt like an underdog. How much do you expect that to go up? Or do you think that in the fantasy community, there's still going to be a bit of trepidation just based on how these last 2 years went?
I don't know, man. I guess I'd lean the second one, more trepidation, I guess, because it's been a costly, you know, it's been a very expensive ride with Kyle Pitts the last couple of years.
Right.
Giving basically zero in fantasy at prices that, you know, his second year were quite high. His rookie year, too. His rookie year was kind of okay. Was slightly disappointing. But then the last 2 years, you know, it was just complete wipeout. So it's understandable if people have hesitation and you know, apprehension about that. I just, obviously, I have a bias leaning toward another direction, so it's kind of easy for me to get over it. I guess I'll have to wait and see what the ADP shapes up like. But in the eighth round, I can probably get over, you know, the last 2 years.
I think I can as well. The tight end market this year, from what I can tell, is a little bit funky. We don't have the first round tight end anymore like we did last year with Travis Kelce. We've got Andrews coming off the injury and everything like that. So his ADP is cooled, although, you know, he obviously got back for the AFC Championship game in some capacity. Should be full go for this coming season. But, you know, I could definitely see myself having a decent number of teams where Kyle Pitts is my number one. I think that still I'll exercise the caution of making sure that I back him up with some depth, you know, maybe wait until I get the bye week information and make sure that I have like a decent pivot just in case that this doesn't end up working out. But for right now, I am going to be in on Kyle Pitts at ADP as a result of this Kirk Cousins signing. I think that the Falcons make sense now as the NFC South favorite. I think they're like minus 110 at most books, something like that, with the Buccaneers, you know, kind of a semi-close second. I kind of agree with how the sports books have that lined up right now. And obviously the Saints and the Panthers well in the rearview mirror, Panthers even more so. We won't spend too long on this one, but I do want to, you know, mention the fallout. In Minnesota, they went ahead and brought in Sam Darnold. Do you think that that's a worthwhile move for them? Is this something where, in your mind, Minnesota views Darnold as a bridge quarterback? Are they going to, or does this alter their plans as far as taking a quarterback in the first round of this year's draft? Do you think that they're more likely to move up to make sure that they get one of these quarterbacks now? Because, I mean, them and Denver and the Raiders, to a lesser extent, now that they've brought in Gardner Minshew, like they all make sense as potential trade up pieces, and they're all going to kind of be vying for.
There's some hot seats too, at least in the case of Minnesota. So yeah, I think it hurts them, man. I know Kwesi was trying to trade up for Richardson last year. It's not like he's averse to making the transition to a rookie quarterback, but the problem this year is they might not have the means to do it, and they lost their guy anyway. So Darnold might not have been a worthwhile signing exactly, but they needed to make it because their alternatives were quickly down to like Easton Stick or something after that. So Darnold over Easton Stick probably, but they still need to try to get a quarterback in the draft, the first round. And I think, even though I basically do not believe in Jaden Daniels, I think JJ McCarthy will go ahead of Daniels, and Daniels will also be gone by the sixth pick. So Minnesota can get there. If my reasoning is correct, they can still get there, but it's going to be very expensive to get guys who probably should be going around the 12th pick anyway. And, you know, it's not like you're trading up for Caleb Williams if you're the Vikings. You're not trading up for Drake May if you're the Vikings. You're trading up for the guys that you 2 months ago were thinking and, you know, were penciling in the order of the draft. We could probably get them where we're at, whatever, they're 10 to 15. Yeah, McCarthy will probably be there. Not now, in my opinion. I think all those guys, I think McCarthy's going to have Daniels, and I think Daniels, even though I expect the league to cool on him a little bit in the next couple of months, the desperation factor for the Giants at six will dictate that it's like, doesn't matter. Even they might not like it that much, but they're going to have to go anyway, because it's just there is no second choice. And Minnesota could be left with Darnold and like Michael Penix, or I don't know. I guess I don't know I don't know what's going on with Knicks nowadays. I still think Knicks might be pretty good. I don't know why there's no talk around him, but if he's in the first round conversation, the Vikings might actually need to trade back and take him, because I assume they're not going to just take him at 11 if they can't trade up past the Giants.
Exactly. And that could be the extent of the options available. And I think that the trade back could work in that particular scenario, because you have four quarterbacks off the board in the top 10 picks. That sort of increases the likelihood of someone that was drafting a little bit later to move on up to get a position of need for them. And therefore you can move back into the 20s and probably still have a good shot at getting one of Penix or Bo Nix. But obviously that's kind of a tough consolation, all things considered, if you were kind of hoping to end up with one of the top four quarterbacks
or Kirk Cousins, as it were. They were saying like, we're really pretty optimistic we're going to keep Kirk, because we love him so much and we can't wait to have him back, and he's just gone in 2 seconds after the tampering window opens.
Yeah, stone cold from Kirk Cousins there. But you know, he's got the Minnesota nice facade, but you know, in reality he's
Well, like Fargo is largely about, you know, how that's just it's at best like a Potemkin population cover, and underneath is mostly just like knives and guns.
Exactly. And I didn't mean to call him Kevin Spacey. I meant to say Kevin Spacey in the film Usual Suspects, more so when it
Oh, that's the Kaiser guy.
Mm-hmm. Kaiser Soze, okay. And yeah, walking with a limp, and then all of a sudden
it's not good to be Kaiser Soze exactly, but it's a lot better to be compared to Kaiser Soze than Kevin Spacey.
That much is for certain. In terms of quarterbacks that surprisingly haven't moved on from their current destinations, how shocked are you by the lack of market forming for Justin Fields? Was this something that you thought was even possible, that we'd be sitting here today a few days into free agency and the Bears would still have him on the roster?
I guess so. As far as why he doesn't have a market, it's just that, in my opinion, we don't have a very, what you would call, organic market of any kind in the NFL. You have a lot of cronyism, you have a lot of nepotism, and the people who make the decisions, sometimes, you know, at the very least, they're not working on merit. They're not there on the basis of merit, which kind of just complicates things and makes things more arbitrary. It's like there's enough recent, or you know, even long ago, instances of NFL decision makers proving themselves not just fallible but basically not credible. And I think that's just getting worse as time goes on. And you throw in the interest complication of analytics and the consultancy industry that comes with it. And I think you just have a lot of, it's almost like corruption in a way, that the pursuits of the teams are not necessarily for the strict pursuit of winning, as far as, you know, demonstrable, as far as what winning would look like would go. And you have people pursuing little, you know, conflicts of interest, basically. And one of those conflicts of interest, in my opinion, is that there's this ideological, it's not really even like an inclination. It's almost like a blacklisting thing nowadays, where it's like, you're not going to get an offensive head coach, or you're not going to get an offensive coordinator, play calling, eventually head coaching spot, if you're a run heavy offensive coordinator. Like you have to bill yourself as like this, you know, analytics guy who's throwing the ball a lot. And those types of coaches, those types of thinkers are all against Justin Fields. They resent quarterbacks like Justin Fields, just as they resent quarterbacks like Lamar Jackson, because they are runners. It's just as simple as that. The main limitation for Fields' market is the fact that there's no one trying to hire people who will call a quarterback to run the ball as much as Fields is obviously capable of and warrants. So you saw it with Getsy, even with Chicago. It's like Getsy wants to call this, you know, this drop back quarterback offense with Justin Fields, and just resents Fields for being a running quarterback instead of just change your offense so it's more of a running offense. You know, make it more like the Eagles did with Hurts. You know, Hurts is clearly, in my opinion, sorry, this is just like the most obvious thing. Hurts is a worse quarterback than Justin Fields. And look at what Hurts was able to do, even if it was only like 2.5 years or whatever. Look what he was able to do with the Eagles when they, A, kept the pass attempt volume limited, B, gave him a, you know, really good offensive line run game, and 2-3 really good receivers, and then just kept that pass attempt volume around like 30. The Eagles were rolling. No one could stop them. It was more when they started throwing the ball 40 times a game last year that Hurts got exposed. And Fields does have maybe some limitations as a passer, but it's not in the arm strength, the accuracy, the velocity, any of that. He can make any throw. It's more the processing that he kind of lags on sometimes. Right. And that's something that Hurts has that the Eagles removed by limiting his route options and the number of routes on a given play. As much play action as possible within that limited pass attempt volume. And that's how you make a player like him look good. But no one wants to run that offense. No one wants to hire anyone who wants to run that offense. So you got like six teams that could plausibly use Fields. You know, five of them already have their quarterback. One is going to get one in the draft or whatever. And Fields is just kind of left in limbo.
Yeah. And I think that's like a key part of this whole thing to me is just like, Fields isn't your typical, you know, obviously, like you'd have to be trading for him first of all. And there's the first round compensation as far as his contract is concerned and making the call on his fifth year option and all that. So that complicates things more than just your standard run of the mill free agent. But I think making the move for him has like political implications within the building, in the sense that like if you're trading for him, like that it's an obvious shot over the bow at whoever the presumptive starter is, you know, elsewhere. So like the Raiders are kind of a weird example because Getsy is there, but you know, if the Raiders
had a conflict of interest thing. It's like the Raiders should go get Justin Fields, but why would Getsy want Fields? Getsy hates him.
What I'm trying to say is like signing Gardner Minshew is less of a, like a, it feels like a more fair competition between him and Aiden O'Connell, whereas like if Fields wasn't starting over Aiden O'Connell, like something is like horribly wrong within the Raiders, and all of a sudden I have questions about Antonio Pierce and how he's running things over there. But yeah, we've just kind
of doubt Tom Telesco.
How could I? But now we're just sort of at this point where like all these quarterbacks who are less than Justin Fields have been signed this week and are in new spots, and we've kind of run out of dance partners. Like
Daniel Jones is a starter. It's so right. This league. Okay. Yeah. It's just ridiculous. So in my opinion, Fields is a like top 20 quarterback. And I think there's a bunch of teams that should want to go after him, but yeah, I guess maybe some of them are sort of waiting to see if Poles lowers his price at the very least. I don't know how that might go, but at this point, I'm not expecting Fields to start anywhere, which is insane because, yeah, this is the same NFL that gave us, four or five years of Daniel Jones starting. I can't remember all the stupid cases. Kenny Pickett, like, my God, stupid league. Stupid.
So I've got two that make sense to me, and then one that's my tinfoil hat special of the week. I think either of the teams that are living in the wake of having Russell Wilson, either Seattle or Denver would make some sense for Fields. And you know, it feels like with each passing day, you know, the leverage as far as like what you need to give up to Chicago in order to get him seems to get less and less. And then lastly, I think Justin Fields is going to be New York Jet when Aaron Rodgers goes on the campaign trail with RFK. That's my bold take of the century of the week.
I hope you're right. I just worry. I think Aaron Rodgers is such a phony idiot. At least now at this point, you know, he's been molded into such a moron and just a narcissistic doink that ultimately he doesn't want smoke, whatever sort of smoke there might be. He just wants to talk and be seen and heard. And so campaigning with RFK Jr. might be a little too much smoke. I'll take the under on Aaron Rodgers' vice presidential runs.
Yeah, I'll have to see the odds for.
But I hope you're right. I much prefer your scenario.
I'm at least putting it out into the universe as a possibility. Please. Because I mean, if you know, the linkages have been there with
Rodgers. That would be so cool. Aaron Rodgers' career ending to get like 0.2% of the vote in one of the most just anyway, really good spot that he's in. Go for it, Aaron. You can do it.
Mark Brunell hanging him up to run with Ralph Nader. All right, let's. I don't know. That was just another. I forgot other like
he was a guy once. Third,
yeah, he was. Yeah, exactly.
We're just remembering guys.
We are, as we are wont to do. All right, before we move on over to running backs and as we suture up the political segment of this podcast, we do have a message from our friends over at Blue Wire.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, and we're on to running backs, Mario. So give your kind of general overview. We'll get to Saquon Barkley first, but like your sort of reaction to the way in which the running back market took shape so quickly relative to other positions in maybe an unexpected way.
Yeah, it was a little weird. It seemed like everybody had their guys. It seemed like terms were tampered with even before the tampering period opened. It seemed as if you see a lot of, I think, teams going at particular players really quickly because they identified them as such, desirable scheme fits. Basically, like you could tell the Bengals were like, we want someone who's kind of like stout and powerful, you know, pick up the blitz, catch, give us basically 4 yards of carry exactly. And that's who Zach Moss is. So it kind of makes sense. You know, the Chargers, being the Harbaugh inclination, they need a power runner. The Chargers have none. The Chargers had no runners at all. So right. Gus Edwards kind of makes sense for obvious reasons because
Greg Harbaugh's Roman too.
Roman too. So those kinds of things made obvious enough sense. I don't know why like DeAndre Swift was specifically a target of the Bears, but it makes sense for the reason that Swift is just generally a pretty good running back. The Bears could use one. So nothing like truly shocking or anything. I think seems like teams picked up players that made sense for them for the most part. I guess I don't know so much in the case of Tennessee what their vision is. I kind of hate it at a glance where they're like, we're just going to rotate 200-pound backs. We're going to have Tony Pollard and Tyjae Spears ostensibly be the exact same guy, but just split their workload for some reason. It's like, why wouldn't you want, how are you going to move the chains if it's 3rd and 1? You know, is it Levis every time?
Yeah. I mean, Levis is down. Like Levis has
Levis
the heart
will
of a Taylor
dive
Heineke.
Through anything. Yeah. He'll jump in a wood chipper.
100%. Like, you know, he really does have that, moxie and chutzpah to him. But someone had a great line after Pollard signed with Tennessee, where it's just like, Tennessee signed Tony Pollard to save Tyjae Spears from becoming Tony Pollard. And obviously that's reference
true.
To last year where Pollard, and you saw it from a million miles away.
Wait,
where
who said
like,
that?
He's going to be
that
overexposed.
Sounds like something I would say, but I didn't say
I want to say it was Davis Maddock had that line over on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, no, honestly, I thought that was like the line of the week, maybe. I mean, that was great stuff.
There's nothing wrong with being the former version of Tony Pollard. It's mm-hmm. cool to be an explosive part-time player. It's good to have, you know, a bunch of guys who can make big plays, and you don't need to scale one of them up to get the, you know, to chase the highest EPA yielded per dollar spent on the cap. You know, you don't need to do that stuff.
No, you can just have a guy be in a role that where he's best utilized, and you know, that's what Pollard was when he was running alongside Zeke, and we saw what happened last year when he got overexposed, and that probably would have happened to Tyjae Spears. I'm only a little bit into my underdog drafting for this year, but I do have Spears on I think two of my big board teams, and I got him at the old ADP, so that smarts a little bit to be clear, because I was getting him, I want to say, in like the sixth round, but
still go around there. I mean, they should both go like in back-to-back picks, you know?
Okay.
Pollard and Spears, I mean.
Right. So I'm trying to think if there was like a true like kind of coin flip backfield last season of that ilk. Do you remember off your head?
The Washington
would have Robinson, like Gibbs and Montgomery been like that? But I mean, the different setup and obviously super favorable and it worked out.
Oh, that's what you mean. Yeah. So the division of labor in the Detroit case is obviously because they have different traits, whereas I think in Tennessee it's like those two running backs will be the only ones who play, provided that either of the two is healthy, and they're just going to kind of, it's going to be like a combination of hot hand plus just weekly workload caps. I think it's just, they might even do a thing like the Bears did. When Montgomery was with the Bears, they would go two series Montgomery, one series Herbert. They would always put in Herbert as the third in the rotation, like every, no matter what, two rotations for Montgomery, then Herbert's the next one. And maybe Tennessee with Pollard and Spears quite simply do that, you know, back-to-back drives or something, like just Spears gets one, Pollard gets one, or maybe two and two, I don't know, but they're gonna come out to a pretty much even split, I think.
I think that there could be utility in both. I think both of them would certainly benefit if Tennessee is able to, you know, cash in on an improved offensive line. I think they should be positioned to be able to do that with their first round pick. But I did see kind of a worrying, you know, list of top 10 offensive linemen from the last like 4 or 5 years. It's not the best list. Like the NFL seems to not always get it right when it comes to how they rank these offensive tackle prospects. And I think you always have a good point where it's like, it's okay to be excited about name a top 10 offensive tackle, but
Joe Alt
as a rookie, it's important to like pump the brakes on how good they're actually going to be right away and how much of an improvement they will be to that offensive.
And the younger
line.
They are,
like exactly. So like the, you know, like I remember like Austin Jackson being a good example from you a couple years ago. It's like, yeah, he can be an improvement, but like it's not going to be an instant fix.
Even better, line. Andrew Thomas.
Oh yeah,
because like his rookie year he really struggled. And then. Yeah. So, yeah, especially like if they're 22 or under, you got to assume like they might have a rough September, October at the very least. And the older they are, the more, you know, the less of an excuse they have for the same struggles. But yeah, Joe Alt, I do think the Titans are, especially after they signed Calvin Ridley, you know, thought maybe they'd go after Neighbors or something like that. But Joe Alt or, you know, whoever the tackle one is, they pretty much have to take whoever it is. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's not guaranteed to fix anything, like you said, but it's just sort of, it's like they got receiver over-invested, if anything, tight end, they're set. There's no corners worth taking there. They pretty much got to take a tackle, offensive tackle.
Yeah. Yeah. They absolutely have to. I think it's an all right enough class as far as that goes. But again, you know, point being, it might not
a lot
just
of right
be this
tackles, it seems like, but Alt is one of the few that pretty, well, did he play right tackle for Notre Dame too? Anyway, there's a lot of right tackles is the challenge, and now they got to, you know, be it Alt or Latham or whoever else, they got to, you know, find somebody to project as a left tackle if they can.
Joe Alt's very big. He'll have to go a little ways to beat my own Mike McGlinchey allegations, but we'll
he should
see.
Be more athletic, right? Like, isn't McGlinchey kind of a lumbering type?
I think so, remember. But I mean, when you're like 6'8 and 300,
he's 6'9. Yeah, Alt is like 6'9, 320. So that, I actually don't like that. I think that's too tall. There's a lot of too tall offensive tackles lately, and like too skinny safeties, and I don't like it. But maybe Alt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 6'8 is generally the cutoff. You really like Colton Miller, whatever his name is 6'9, I think. But other than him, it's just never really happened. Short sample, of course. There's not a lot of 6'9 failures either, but it's just it's a pre-selection thing that probably happens for a reason.
And Miller also, I think, famously took a little while to get himself going before.
He was an all tools kind of prospect. He was rough out of UCLA.
Should have played basketball. Anyway. So all of this is a long preamble to say Saquon Barkley on the Eagles. How about that?
Yeah, it's cool. I wish him well. I mean, the Eagles have
Tiki doesn't.
Right, Tiki. That guy's really funny for a lot of reasons. I can't reference the funniest thing about him on the podcast, but if you know, you know. Really great television Olympics broadcast content from Tiki 20 years ago or whenever that was. I think that the Eagles got their problems maybe, but it still has to be a way better situation than with the Giants. I mean, even though I like Dable and have so much more trust in Dable than Brian Johnson, Daniel Jones is woated, and the Eagles, they have their downward trajectories over the years at times, but Howie Roseman generally gets them on track. Maybe it takes them a little time, but it usually doesn't take that much time. And generally they find a way to get back and remain on track. So if the Eagles are even, 85% of the offense that they were the 2.5 years, and then exempting the last 6 weeks or whatever of this year, whatever, 8 weeks, whatever it was, if they could just be like 85% of that peak period of the Eagles, that would still have to be pretty easily the best offense Barkley has ever played in, even if you're going to one of those, better Eli Manning years or whatever, if there was one. So it's hard to tell. The volume might go, the volume probably will drop. The Giants, they would put everything on Barkley that he could handle, and the Eagles don't need to do that. They can't do that. They need to get the ball to AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, et cetera, so that everybody's happy. And you can't do that if Barkley's getting as much work as he was with the Giants. So he's going to see fewer carries, maybe fewer targets, probably fewer targets too. But it should be interesting to see if Barkley can become a high efficiency, high touchdown percentage kind of runner after being pretty much just usage driven with the Giants and, their constant issues.
And, this is something that maybe we'll hem and haw about over the summer, but with Jason Kelce having retired, maybe we see a scaling back of the tush push, maybe more goal line carries for the running backs, therefore a lot more touchdowns potentially for Saquon Barkley. I know that I sort of just on blind faith, not necessarily that I was thinking that he was going to be an Eagle necessarily, but a big theme of my early best ball drafts has been, why is Saquon available in the third? Like, I'll just take him.
Yeah, why is he?
I'm expecting that to tick up. It looks like over on Sleeper, he's going at pick 11. I'm having trouble pulling up the rest of the best ball ADP right now, but I imagine that the ADP will get closer to the mid second round or maybe even late first now as a result of this. But yeah, I think that this Eagles offense could look a little bit different. I think that the offensive line just inherently is going to be a little bit worse without Jason Kelce anchoring it in the middle. But, Barkley having that complete back that can play every snap, unlike Swift. And maybe that was a little bit of the Eagles kind of getting in their own way with how they chose to do their running back rotation last year. But either way, I mean, you're not ponying up that type of money for a kind of rotational back. I think that it's a pretty clear signal that Barkley is going to be a huge part of that offense. I think to your point, it's not the best offense for like cheap PPR points from the running back spot because it's not super dump off heavy. But even still, I think that Barkley, if you got him early before this move, great. But I'm probably still going to be willing to go after him at the new price too.
The new price is a little tough for me, but I won't want to go into the year with zero exposure. So if it stays there, I'll have to get some. I'd much prefer the third round price, obviously.
Of course, I'll look back on those teams and like the Wolverine meme and just like remember those times where I could get them at pick 25. Moving on, little bit of self-indulgence here. Derrick Henry on the Ravens. How about it?
Yeah, I'm you know, here for it. Fingers crossed, etc. I'm a big fan of Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson, so I'd like this to go swimmingly, to say the least. And I think it could. It could, you know, disappoint too. It's hard to tell with a case so serially unprecedented as Derrick Henry. The general precedent would be that a guy with as many carries as him would project for, you know, to fall off a cliff any second. However, it actually would have projected that, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, and it just kind of hasn't happened. For years, people have been saying, oh, Derrick Henry, Jamal Anderson 2.0, nothing different about those guys. And you know, no matter how many times it happened, like this year at Next Gen Stats, I believe NFL Next Gen Stats, I don't know who, I assume Achane was the number one, but the highest miles per hour among NFL running backs and as a ball carrier in 2023 was Derrick Henry. I don't remember what the miles per hour was, but
it was around 20. It was against the Ravens. Although importantly, Mario, and this could blow up your entire argument, that game was in London. It's on the fast soccer turf.
Oh, is it? is soccer turf fast? I don't know.
I'm literally
they
just,
can't use
like,
the same
just
turf,
being okay. A dingus.
Hey, if their stadiums work like ours, and you know we have owners like Al Davis just having like a baseball field in his football field for 15 years, it's like I don't know what they do in Europe. Yeah, it's not like that. It wouldn't be any dumber than what we do if they were to do that. But yeah, I would hope that even if Derrick Henry sort of loses a step, a half a step, now that he's another year older, then it would still be enough, especially in the context of running in a Lamar Jackson offense. And the thing, as far as like projecting Henry's specific effect on the Ravens offense, the thing you have to keep in mind is that as much as the Tennessee offense fed Derrick Henry and, you know, generally kind of set him up for success at especially when their offensive line was any good, 4 or 5 years ago or whatever, like they always constructed that offense with Derrick Henry being the lightning rod and the battering ram at the same time. You know, it's like they basically at this every snap are just kind of like, defense, we're giving it to this guy, good luck. And the defense would, you know, sell out to stop him, and they just kind of go at it for a while until he gets to 20 carries and he starts just running over people, and that's how they'd win games. But with the Ravens, it's not going to look like that. It's not going to be put the bullseye in Derrick Henry and give him the ball 30 times. It's going to be Derrick Henry's in the backfield, Lamar Jackson is the quarterback, and what do you want to test your luck with more? Like, do you want to give too much contain to Lamar Jackson and let Derrick Henry run easily up the middle? Like that's something that never happened with Tennessee. You'd never have wide splits as a defense against Tennessee because they'd always be in big personnel, and you knew Derrick Henry was going, he'd go off tackle, yes, but he'd also go between the tackles for the most part. With the Ravens, they're not going to be able to put the defenses are not going to be able to approach the Ravens the same way that they did the Titans. They're going to have to put wider defensive end splits, because if they don't, Lamar Jackson's going to run off the edge over and over, and there's nothing a spy can do about it. You have to put contain in mind with Lamar Jackson, and they never had contain in mind with Derrick Henry. It was always like, we have to, and I specifically mean edge contain. They were like, we have to get like five people on the line of scrimmage every play. That's what they would do. If you try to do that with Lamar and Derrick Henry at the same time, you run a high risk of a leak springing somewhere, and it'll be at a very high cost, because you won't have people, you'll have your safeties, but if you're in a 5-2 look, there's a chance there's no linebacker there. And if there is a linebacker there, Lamar can make a miss anyway. So it's just going to be a lot. It's going to be spreading defensive front sevens thin, dealing with this Ravens, the Lamar Jackson off tackle threat, the Derrick Henry between the tackle threat. And yeah, I'm optimistic that even though his workload's going to go down, I think to the tune of like, I don't know, 15 carries a game, honestly, maybe not much more than that. He also might average like 5.5 yards per carry, even as a 30-year-old running back.
That's what I'm thinking. I think the overall gains in efficiency are going to kind of paper over like the downward pressure on his carries. You know, he had 280 carries last year in a full season. You know, that's 350 the season before. So yeah, I think somewhere in the 250 range, it makes sense. Take a couple carries off.
Maybe his plate, a little maybe more in the playoffs. Like maybe mm-hmm. they up it a little in the playoffs, but yeah, they don't want to run him into the ground. I'd like to believe Keaton Mitchell will be back, but I don't want to get my hopes up there.
I have a small bit of context for you. So Derrick Henry had his introductory press conference with the Ravens today, and Eric DaCosta was there, the general manager. They got asked about Keaton Mitchell. I didn't love the phrasing of this one, and you know, phrasing is phrasing. You know, it could mean any number of things. But DaCosta basically said, in regards to Keaton Mitchell, like we're looking forward to having him back at some point this season. So I'm guessing from that Keaton Mitchell can be viewed again. You know, like we're not going to know for sure until the summer and like pup list and stuff. But it wouldn't shock me, given that he tore that leg up in mid December, that you know maybe instead of being ready for week one, maybe it's like more like an October.
I would have never considered week one a possibility. I'm concerned about Mitchell being back at any point, but if he's back by like week eight or whatever, that'd be sick. If he's Keaton Mitchell, that is like the most thunder and lightning backfield ever if that happens. Yeah. So I really hope it does. But also I think maybe there's a chance the Ravens re-sign Dobbins to a like 1 year cheap deal, and then
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, they should try to don't let like that talent get away just because bad luck struck the team. You know, in Dobbins, of course, like don't let some other team get all of the you know the windfall of you drafting a really good player. Just keep him, especially since he's cheap. He can't command a whole lot. Just keep him for 1 year. It suits the interests of both sides.
I think so too. And obviously, with this flurry of running back movement and him not being among it so far, I think that ups the Ravens' chances of re-signing him if that's what they end up wanting to do. But yeah, as it stands, I think the Ravens do have some work to do as far as building the backfield around Henry because, you know, as we've established, Keaton Mitchell probably not going to be ready in the early goings.
Hill, please, God.
Yeah, like respect to Justice Hill for, you know, playing the best ball of his career, but low bar what was set by him in the previous season. So I think maybe a later round running back would make some sense. That there should be at least a couple available. But I think Dobbins should be kind of like plan A there now that they have Henry in the building. But regardless, I do think that's a signing that makes all the sense in the world. And I was glad that ended up coming in. We talked about Tennessee a little bit earlier. We mentioned Swift in the context of the Eagles, but what do you think of him now on the Bears? I mean, it's refreshing that we don't have to hear from Roschon Johnson people anymore. But beyond that, Swift in Chicago, your thoughts?
Yeah, Swift's just kind of, I think, an average starter, but which is to say generally good. You know, average is not bad necessarily. It's just he's not like a top 10 back. He fits in the category of pretty good at most stuff, you know, makes big plays, pretty good clip, has a big, truly big game now and then, but he'll also kind of just sort of underachieve for no obvious reason at other points. So he's not the foundation of any offense, but obviously that's not the way the Bears are going to run things. He's not, in my opinion anyway, he's not going to be like a 20 carry back. He's going to be like a 14, and if Herbert's still around, they'll give him like 3 and whatever else. And I do think that they should probably be done with Johnson as a running back, but at fullback it would make sense for him to keep playing.
Okay, so for fantasy, do you think you'll have interest in Swift then?
I don't know what the price is. We'll have to see how the ADP lines up, but I'm curious. I mean, I think Caleb Williams is really good. Even though I like Justin Fields a lot and think he's been given just an incredibly raw deal with the NFL, I think Caleb Williams is a better prospect than Justin Fields was. And that offense should, you know, it should be decent. There's not really an obvious reason why it shouldn't go well. And if Swift's a starting running back in a vaguely productive offense, that's usually a, you know, totally solid fantasy profile.
I think what I'm seeing, at least over on Sleeper's Market, is Swift as like a mid-fifth.
I don't hate it. I might like it. I guess I gotta, yeah, I gotta just grapple more with the ADP in general, but there's nothing that sounds wrong to me fifth round. What about you?
I'm there too. I think I just have some optimism in the Bears right now. I think that, you know, Caleb Williams coming in there, I don't think that you have to worry about like Fields taking up a bunch of carries that same way. I don't think Caleb is someone that runs to run. I think he runs outside the pocket to like extend plays and look downfield. So you don't have to worry so much about a bunch of the carry share being eaten up by the quarterback. I still have like workload concerns when it comes to Swift generally, because he's kind of famously not been the most durable guy. And like, even when he's out there, if he's been on the injury report that week, it's like we're looking at a pretty dicey Sunday a lot of the times.
A little bit of a fumbler too. So he's not bad, but it's like he if he has like 2 and 3 weeks, there could be all of a sudden like a little bit of like a you know, groaning about it.
No, exactly. But I think you're buying talent and you're buying an offense that we can expect to be better this year, and for him to have a decent share of the rushing work. So I think, you know, I'll stamp of approval for where his ADP is. And then rounding out the running backs, just a little trading places / moving around, Mixon to the Texans and Zach Moss to the Bengals. Your thoughts on these guys?
Well, Mixon is not exciting to me, and I don't know. Neither was Singletary. It's not like I consider it a downgrade exactly. It's just Mixon, I think, has been shown for a player that is, though very talented in general, his athleticism is not so easily functional in the NFL. Like he's cool. He's good at doing like cool stunts athletically, but for doing running back specific tasks, like, you know, drills of breaking down between the tackles and navigating through traffic, I just don't think Mixon has it. It's like he needs a little more room than is ever practically there. And so there will be these plays where he gets the room to really break into his full stride. And that's what always got people excited about him, because it's like once he gets galloping, he gets to a pretty high speed, but he just kind of needs all that wind up space, and it's usually not there. So I expect him to be pretty much what he was with the Bengals, which is to say a plodding runner who occasionally gets a big play just because he does have that speed when the lane clears fully. But more so his usefulness will be as a pass catcher, I think, because that was one thing he always did really well with the Bengals. You know, his pass catching stats have been pretty solid the whole time. And he's had a couple seasons that were legitimately like high volume too. So I expect Mixon to, you know, basically be to the Texans what Moss is to the Bengals. You know, it's just the same guy, 4 yards a carry. They can catch 3 or 4 or 5 passes for you. And if that's all you need, then they should be fine.
Go on.
I didn't want to interrupt because I was going to go to the next name again, but then forgot you would have something to say.
So with Mixon, I like it for the Texans for a couple different reasons. I think that they were a team that needed to improve its backfield.
Yeah.
But I kind of always rejected the premise of them being in on Barkley, because I wouldn't mess with the formula that much, right? Like if you're going to bring in Barkley, that's you're allocating a lot of dollars and oxygen to the backfield. And it's like, why mess with what you have cooking with CJ Stroud? So I think just having like a replacement level running back, like a Joe Mixon right now that can absorb the work in that backfield and, you know, Pierce, I guess, spelling in occasionally, maybe they get someone like more of like a speed pass catchy threat now that Singletary's gone somewhere in the draft. But I think if you're investing in Mixon for this year, you're investing in a guy that should be top of the depth chart for an offense that should be one of the best in the league. And you get in enough red zone trips, like Mixon should be punching him in. So like, I think
it's there too.
Definitely. So I think that, you know, while the per play stuff and that there probably won't be a ton of Mixon highlights, but there's probably going to be a lot of him just kind of waltzing into the end zone from 3 yards out. And that to me is probably going to be enough to invest.
Yeah. I think even if the touchdowns aren't so much there, he could be like a 50, 60 catch running back too. The only reason I say that is if the Texans don't add, you know, a faster pass catchy type, however they might between now and the start of the year, then Mixon might just play like 55 snaps a game. It might just be like Pierce doesn't play at all. Singletary would rotate a little bit because Singletary is 5'7", 200 pounds, but Singletary is not as good of a pass catcher as Mixon. So it might not be that they rotated Pierce in last year because they wanted to. It might have been like they felt like Singletary just kind of needed a breather or whatever. Mixon might not need it.
That's true. So all that to say, like, I'll probably have some interest in Mixon. Again, provided they don't do anything in the draft, but I don't know if there's anyone in the draft.
It's not really an obvious fit.
Yeah. So I think that actually ends up boding well for Mixon. And I think the writing had been on the wall that he was going to be out in Cincinnati. And I think it's smart for the Bengals to get someone like Moss, who had the year that he did last year, because as much as I like Chase Brown, it probably was a little bit presumptuous to say that he can absolutely like handle the three down role for the Bengals. Like
you need multiple guys too.
Yeah, you do. So I don't know if it hurts. It hurts like the upper range of outcomes for Chase Brown, but I still think that he's draftable. And I would imagine that the price comes down a little bit with that Moss addition. But I don't know if I'm going to draft a lot of Moss necessarily. But
he's got a long injury history. Moss has quite a long injury history, including a knee way back at Utah. So that's why I will not be too worried for Chase Brown. It's easy to imagine Brown starting games this year, even with Moss there.
Yeah. So don't be too afraid of that signing if you are a Brown optimist, such as myself. Let's round it out with some wide receivers. The market there a little bit slower to pick up than at these other positions, but the big one, the Ballad of Balky, as you so dubbed it earlier on in the show. I mean, you made I was in the middle of a RotoWire baseball auction yesterday afternoon, so I kind of missed the Twitter back and forth as far as like, you know, the sources coming out like, oh, is another AFC South rival. And then it's like, no, Ridley's just waiting. So they don't have to give the pick back to the Falcons. And then he's going to re-sign with the Jags. And then the Titans, of all people, come in over the top and just drop the absolute bag for one Calvin Ridley. So
it's pretty funny, dude. Trent Baalke has to be the color of like a tomato the past 18 hours. Just turning a dark shade of red, leathery kind of texture, because he's grinding his teeth quite a lot also. He's really in it right now, and it's so funny because he probably thought it was so smart what he was doing. He's like, I'll save us a round of value by signing him after 4 p.m. and that way we'll only trade a third rounder instead of a second. So now, yeah, you sort of got the third round pick traded instead of the second. Call that whatever victory you want. The player is gone, and you made this trade explicitly for the stated purpose of having Ridley re-signed after you get him into the clubhouse or whatever. And now, that also might be one of those funny contracts where they don't even get like the comp eligibility because there was the deadline shenanigans. I don't know. But maybe they'll get like a third round pick next year for Ridley if they don't sign too many players. But watch Balky screw that up too and not even be like eligible for the comp pick. So Gabe Davis, I like Gabe Davis. I think he's actually gotten kind of like a raw deal. I think the Bills were just using him as a decoy. You know, they're using him the way they would have used like Robert Foster or Marquise Goodwin or something. Like, well, that makes sense when you run a 4-3, but not when you run a 4-5-4 like Gabe Davis does. And so Gabe Davis all along needed to be used more in the intermediate, but in the Jags offense, when you throw in the Press Taylor factor, it's going to be a small field that they're working with. There's a reason why Evan Engram had so many targets at like 4 yards depth of targets, because the field is collapsing on that offense at all times because there is no ability to keep the safeties back from crashing forward. And it's going to get even worse next year. They need some kind of speed element to change that. Right now, they're just doomed. Ridley with the Titans is not exciting either, but I don't know. I guess we'll see about the Nepo case. Maybe he'll turn out to be a good coach, and maybe his dad running his offensive line for him will make it easy. Maybe it's like having training wheels as an NFL head coach. Good for him. And you know, if DeAndre Hopkins is still there next year, DeAndre Hopkins, Ridley, Burks, presumably in the slot, Okonkwo, that is a three wide rotation that can probably lift up even like a quarterback like Levis. You know, it's like Bortles had a 32, 35 touchdown season or whatever. And Levis can kind of do that if he ends up in the same situation. Obviously, I'm skeptical that Callahan and the Titans leadership are the types to pull it off. I think that's a pretty tough division. I have a lot of respect for Steichen and D'Amico Ryans. I think they're generally going to be whipping the other two teams, but I guess we'll see. I think in general, though, it's more like the Titans kind of wrecked the Jags more than they made themselves good.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it. I guess that puts the Jags back in the market, theoretically, for a wide receiver earlier on in the draft, and they probably
need a lot. They needed a corner.
Yeah.
They were supposed to get they were cutting Darius Williams, and the ball, he was like, don't worry, we're going to get a corner at the 17th pick. He's like, no, now you need Adonai Mitchell or whoever, so who's your corner now?
Right.
That one Arkansas guy, Miles, bad GM.
Yeah, not good. And then I realize as we wrap up here, I mentioned the Falcons and them needing to fill out the receiver room. I actually did like the Mooney signing for them.
Yeah, I think he's fine. He really struggled last year. I think you know, some of that might be on Fields. Mooney generally being like the third or fourth read. Fields generally not getting through reads that fast. With the Falcons, he might not have a ton of opportunity, but Cousins should be, if he's 100%, a more effective passer than Fields. And for the Falcons, you know, outside of Mooney's fantasy utility, it could be a good signing for the Falcons for the purposes of spacing. You know, the problem right. that the Jags have about not keeping the safeties back, maybe Mooney's not like striking fear into the heart of the defense, but it's pretty easy to demonstrate with him to a defense. Like, look, if you don't put a safety over the top of him and we get your slower corner in a play action post route, you're in trouble. So just keep a safety over the top. Okay. And they'll be like, yeah, okay, fine. And then you can run more.
See? So, but I like it for that. I think it helps the overall health of the Falcons offense. I probably won't get him much in PPR scoring, man. But I could see the case for him in underdog and another half point. You know, I could see some touchdowns, some long touchdowns in there with him being the deep threat theoretically in that offense. Any other signings that catch your eye before we sign off?
Sorry, not really. Nothing off the top of my head. Yeah, I'm mostly just at this point watching to see what happens with Dobbins, and I guess Marquise Brown could be interesting. That he has been disappointing and injury prone and all that, but he's been heavily targeted everywhere. If he ends up with like the Chiefs, that could be pretty cool.
I that seems to be where the smoke is right now, Hollywood. Oh, nice. to the Chiefs. So I could definitely see that happening. I would consider them the favorite to get his services, and I think that would be a really nice like speed compliment. To add in there. And you know, you still have Rice and Kelsey as your alphas. I think Brown, like you said, he's been heavily targeted. I think he's at his best as like a really fast wide receiver too, and obviously yep. Mahomes can access him deep down the field. But that's going to do it for us here on this edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, breaking down free agents. Of course, we'll be back next week kind of doing some cleanup and then probably looking ahead to the draft a little bit more, as well as pro days kind of get heated up here. And again, if you want to check out RotoWire and you aren't already subscribing, go to rotowire.com/pod, get that free trial, check out what we have behind the paywall, including some of Mario's articles and tons of rankings, projections, all that good stuff. Also, I don't know if you've heard, but baseball right around the corner. We have insane baseball tools, rankings, all that good stuff. That was a total lifesaver.
Best analyst, John.
Easily. Clay, James, all those guys, they're the goats. No question about it. But for Mario Puig, I'm John McCackney. Thanks for listening.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.